Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Dylan Mackey on the show for the first time. It's really fun to get to know a new angler on the podcast each and every time. Dylan is no exception. Super, super fun to get to know Dylan. He's got a great story and does a lot of fishing. He's definitely a young guy, kind of a young gun, if you will, in the industry. And him and his tournament partner, Joe Bricko from JT Outdoor Products, we've had Joe on before, but Dylan and Joe fish the Ames circuit in the Minnesota division of the Ames over in Minnesota. They fish some other tournaments as well, of course, but tremendous success. I mean, historically, but this year they just had a phenomenal season and they won Team of the Year recently here just a few days ago after winning the championship, the Minnesota State Championship for the Ames. Is a two-day tournament on Lake of the Woods. We kind of recap the whole season after we get to know Dylan more personally and figure out what makes him tick. And he's definitely a fishy dude. It's fun to get the stories. It's fun to get to know him. And just get to know him as a person while talking fishing. It doesn't get any better. So let's get to it here. We got a brand new angler to the podcast, new guest, Dylan Mackey. Let's get to it.
Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area
with over 40 years of combined experience.
They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast.
JT Outdoor Products has created a phenomenal lineup of technique-specific rods built entirely to give any angler the advantage against a tournament field, or more importantly, the target species of the day. For any angler that is looking to take their next fishing experience to another level, consider the confidence you might have with a JT rod in your hands. For more information on all the rod offerings at JT, head to their website. That's jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Also on the website, take the time to look up the impressive pro staff that JT has put together and find out why so many top industry pros, from tournament anglers to fishing guides across the Midwest, swear by the rods built at JT Outdoor Products. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Where do we got to start this conversation, just getting to know you? Where are you from? Where did you cut your teeth in fishing, and who are your mentors? Like what's your origin story in fishing, man? Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a funny story, really. My family, I have a lot of family members who are really big into fishing, but my dad, my dad and parents are not super huge fishermen. So I actually raced motocross for a lot of my years growing up. And in about 2014 or 2015, I ended up selling my racing dirt bikes and bought my first boat. And that first summer of fishing, I entered my first tournament, you know, obviously still hungry for the competition side of something. So I bit right into that, obviously, with very, very minimal skill of fishing at all, other than, you know, a jig and a minnow. So was very green at that point. I think we maybe caught one or two fish out of our possible five for the first tournament. But you know, the competition side of it was super cool, and I was into it. You know, the even still now, the fun of it is trying to figure things out. You know, it's obviously the tournament days are super fun, but the chase is that feeling of figuring it out, you know, pre-fishing type stuff. So yeah, that's kind of where I started. Bought my first Lund and just slowly started to learn. I tried to, for the first few years, I kept a logbook of, you know, water temperatures and what we're using and kind of spots and stuff like that, just to try to speed up the learning curve a bit. But it was always crazy to me, just as you think you've kind of got something a little bit dialed in, you know, something new comes out, or you learn a new technique, or, you know, new technology, or, you know, different brands of graphs, how each brand is a little bit better in their own little scenario and stuff like that. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I think in 2017, I got one of my first sponsors was JT Outdoor Products, and I kind of needed a tournament partner. And we had a little team meeting with JT here in Grand Rapids, and Joe Bricko, the owner of the company, I said, "Hey, what do you got going on this summer? You want to fish a couple tournaments?" And he said, "Yeah, I'll check the schedule," and kind of didn't think he would actually fish any tournaments with me. But so we've been fishing the whole AIM series since 2017. It was kind of a shot in the dark, and since then we've become great buddies. He was best man in my wedding, and we just kind of been going from there.
Have you ever had like a home body of water? And if so, like, what was it? Has that changed? Like those early years when you got your first boat and really started fishing a lot, where was that happening? What was that like?
Yeah. Up here in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, about 4 hours north of the Twin Cities. It's called Pacagama Lake. It's a deep, 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 clear lake, lots of structure, smelt forage. And honestly, a really challenging lake to fish. You know, one of the first things I learned from Pacagama is if the fish were there one day, it's almost not even worth fishing it the following day, because, you know, that's how much they move there. They're not going to be there again. So a lot of northern Minnesota lakes like Pacagama, Leech, Cass, Winnie, dabbled in Lake of the Woods a little bit here and there. But just honestly kind of followed the tournaments around. Like, I had never fished Cass Lake much before, but when the Cabela's MWC goes there in the fall, we'd always do that one in September. So just kind of spent a lot of time with the stuff, you know, within a couple hours of Grand Rapids here.
Dude, I've heard a lot of great things. I mean, I feel like I've maybe tickled the topic a little bit over the years, but that Pokegama Lake, we might have to devote our next podcast completely to that lake, because I am super intrigued by that. That's a really, that thing's got its own big story to tell for sure. But I like that. Like, one thing I'm also curious about, when you're not sort of like baptized at a young age, it's something that you sort of came to ultimately on your own, or just as a young adult getting into fishing, I'm talking about. And, you know, maybe like 10 years ago or whatever. I'm curious what that's like for you. Like, there was a lot of technology already around at that time. What were some of your influences? Were you getting like mentorship type of advice? You know, you talk about a logbook, you know, and just kind of teaching yourself these things, trying to remember and grow as an angler. But I'm just sort of curious, like, where some of that advice was coming from, or what kind of content you were consuming, or maybe you were just completely just going out on your own. And if so, like, I'm just sort of curious about that mindset and like what your major influences were in those first, you know, 3-4 years for you.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Luckily I had a really good friend and from high school that, we've continued the friendship, but his name was Colt Anderson. He kind of took me under his wing for those first couple of years and taught me a lot. And he'd been fishing, you know, quite a bit since his early days. So he knew an absolute crazy amount. And then obviously tied in with all the rest of the guys from Hang Loose Outdoors, like Brock Anderson and Randy Topper. You know, they would teach us in a way where they wouldn't just flat out say, you know, you should use this color and check this depth. You know, they would kind of give us little subtle hints, but they always wanted us to figure things out on our own. They didn't just give us the playbook and say, you know, okay, now we'll find your own spots. We're going to be fishing this tournament here. You know, try to replicate it. They kind of just let us go on our own. So, We definitely started from right away, the early age of definitely having to figure it out, you know. But obviously the subtle hints and after tournament discussions were huge from that. So I definitely owe a lot of learning to all them guys for sure.
Do you feel like there's like a timeline where, or maybe some like events, some stories, like fishing outings, or just some literally sometimes it's like individual fish catches that where you feel like there was some turning points in your career? You talk about, you know, getting your first sponsor and getting into tournament fishing, but You know, that stuff doesn't just fall out of the sky, so to speak, right? There's got to be a story to tell there. Like, when did things sort of take a turn where you were legitimately figuring some stuff out? You were having some success. You were earning the respect from these guys. I'm just sort of curious about maybe some of those stories, those reflections. I don't know if that's even something that you think about.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely. Definitely the first story that comes to mind is was actually our first win. We won in 2017. We won the Joe Bricco and I won the AIM Walleye Series Championship on Lake Vermilion, which was a 2-day tournament. And we won that trolling some crankbaits on spinning reels with 10-pound braid. Our trolling pass was super short, so it was a huge advantage to be able to cast your crankbaits as far as you could, just as far as getting your line out faster. You know, you could make a 300-400-yard pass instead of it being a half mile, so you had time to deploy a bunch of lead core and stuff like that. That was probably one of our defining moments as we grew as a team was that win on Lake Vermilion.
I'll definitely someday have to ask Joe the same question, but like, what do you think it is about yourself? Your learning curve was obviously very steep. Your story, you know, this timeline, you talk about 2014, 2015, getting your first boat. I mean, you know, your ascent was pretty rapid to just getting into the industry, not just getting into fishing, but like you also just like getting into the industry, having a network or, you know, resources like Joe Bricco being your tournament partner. Like, what do you think it is about yourself that somebody like Joe would see in you that he would just seemingly on a whim just sort of accept your invitation to fish some tournaments? How do you wrap your head around that?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, because at that time, I mean, he didn't even hardly know my name. So I mean, that was just kind of a luck of the straw there to get that going. But once we did start fishing together, you know, I think a key role that's been played is just time on the water and maximizing the amount of time that you can carve away for pre-fish. You know, just because tournament hours are over at 3, a lot of people start to pack up their day, you know, shortly after those hours. But you know, we're trying as hard as we can to bring enough food to fish sun up to sundown, all those days that we're pre-fishing, just, you know, maximizing time. There's been many tournaments that we've done well in that we find our starting spot, you know, just an hour before it's time to get off the water on the last day of pre-fish. So just, you know, hard work, keeping your head on the grindstone is what I would, how I would answer that.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that, like an established angler that has the experience, represents a company, you know, owns a company sponsoring young anglers. If you see that work ethic and positive attitude, just somebody that you're down to spend some time with, the fishing stuff will iron itself out. I feel like,
yes.
You know, that, yep. I could, yep. I feel like you're probably totally spot on with that.
Yeah. But, and you know, another thing I should definitely add to that too, as far as a mentor, has been for sure Joe himself. He has taught me more about fishing than I ever even knew was possible. And especially in our early years of tournament fishing, the trolling game, whether that was lead core or whatever you call it, his trolling knowledge is massive. So he's been trolling for, you know, 20 years before I even started fishing. So I obviously learned a ton from him, just, you know, from that to walleye behavior, you know, from spring to fall, just, you know, seasonal movements, patterns, things like that.
Yeah. So, like, you know, not on tournament day, just yourself, just maybe, you know, like during pre-fish or just on a fun day of fishing, what does that look like for you? What's your style? Like, how would you describe your style? Maybe it's some fishing stories. Maybe it's, you know, depicting some, you know, just your favorite techniques, you know, or just the big picture, generalizing yourself. How do you answer that? Like, what's your fishing style?
Yeah, you know, definitely since we've spent so many years fishing AIM, my fishing style for sure is I am totally programmed to big fish. You know, there's been a few times where fish fry is in the carts and I'm like, boy, I don't even hardly know where to find eaters anymore. You know, that can be just because of, you know, how we're programmed so much to be looking for the biggest fish in the system. So, you know, a normal day of fishing for me kind of kind of, I try to break down the water every single time, even if I was out the day before, whether that starts with checking something to shoreline, to not connected to shoreline, mid lake humps, flats, a sharp break, slow tapering break, you know, kind of try to look at all the different structural elements to see what those fish are doing. You know, it could even be just a deep flat basin that they're suspended out in, or, you know, something of that nature. Not getting caught on, okay, I'm, you know, you see a lot of people go out and just go from point to point to point. Well, they might not be on points that day, you know, just kind of trying to look at, get a little sample of everything. And then once you start to get those first couple clues, you know, build on it from there.
I got to remind myself those things every single day. I think I'm going to be 100 years old and I'm still going to get to the end of the day and be slapping myself on the head going, oh man, I forgot this, or I forgot that. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. I like getting those reminders and hearing those stories from guys that, you know, you guys definitely, it's definitely hard work. Nobody's going to say it isn't, but you guys do have the ability at times, especially this year, kind of get into it a little bit. You and Joe, you've made some things look easy. You know, it never is, but you've made some things look easy this year. And so much goes into it. Sometimes particular fish catches on tournament day are years in the making with a spot, you know, a presentation that gets dialed
absolutely.
In. And there, it's unbelievable the extent, you know, just we're learning so much. And so you can dial those things in. Things can get so narrowly focused. And, you know, the attention to detail on that high level is, it's so impressive. And, you know, you guys have definitely had, you know, talking about your team, you and Joe on the AIM circuit this year, like, yep. You've had some unbelievable fish catches that, you know, yeah, it's just like almost seems unfathomable, but there's no question you guys working as a team, all the pre-fish, you know, your whole traveling team, and everybody, you know, kind of contributing, but man, in those moments, I'm kind of curious about that. Maybe kind of get a little bit more narrowed down on your season this year. Cause you guys just, you know, you just wrapped it up, you know, you won the state championship in Minnesota, and, you and Joe were team of the year. And, yep. You know, but that's not the beginning and end of the story. So, I want to get some stories from this year, man. Give me like sort of a recap of the season, but I want to hear some stories. I want to hear kind of what some of the, you know, fun experiences, some of the fun takeaways, the fun memories, the fun things you guys were saying to each other in the boat, or maybe the highs and lows, you know, just things that you can remember from each of these tournaments, man. But give me a little bit of a rundown of the season.
Yeah, so we were in a little bit of an interesting spot for how our season was going to go. They take the best three of your four finishes for the AIM going into the Team of the Year plus the state championship. So this year, we from winning our CAS MWC last year, we qualified for the NTC, which was out on Lake Erie, which unfortunately was real close to when the Big Stone event was for AIM. I think they would have been back-to-back, so that would have made like five tournaments in a row for us. So we decided early on that we were going to skip Big Stone, knowing that we wouldn't have a drop tournament. So we knew that, you know, going into the season that all the points are really going to count for us. So we went into the river, Mississippi River Pools 3 and 4 in Red Wing, which traditionally we've never done real well down there. You know, we don't get a lot of opportunities to fish anything river related around here. So it's always a huge learning curve going down there for us. So luckily this year it was a pre-spawn bite. So the dam bite was going on. I don't know, there was 300-400 boats up at the dam. And we got super lucky and caught two big ones and three small ones. And I believe that a lot of the rest of the field just got the one big kicker. So we, you know, I feel as though we got real lucky and got two big kickers. So we came out of that event with a win when in reality we were just trying to save face for some points. So we got super lucky there. It was unbelievable. Did not see that coming at all. So then fast forward to Mille Lacs. We walked out of Mille Lacs with a top five on that one. I think we were maybe 6 or 7 pounds out of the lead, or 5 or 6, something like that. So we got some really good points. Ames points are calculated with your points divided by the winner's points times 100. So it's not, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is associated with your points. It's how far away from the winning weight you were. So that we walked away with some really good points there. And then fast forward to Leech Lake. There was some structure that was going off in Walker Bay that was doing really well, but we felt as though a lot of the other competitors also knew that. So we tried to find something that was off the beaten path a little bit. You know, one of the things to take a huge account for is on spots like that. You know, you throw 100 teams on a body of water, and everybody goes in there and samples one or two of them throughout the week. You know, that's a lot of fish that get caught off of the same spot. So we're always trying to pay attention to how many boats are looking at certain things. And we felt that place was getting pretty hammered. So we tried to find something off the beaten path. And honestly, there was not very many fish in this area that we found. And, you know, we just, even though we had our mindset to just go for points, we thought, well, let's just go for it. We knew we could have a shot at winning it if we could come across enough fish to throw at, you know, maybe 1 in 5 or 1 in 10 actually bites. So we went for it on Leech. We came in with 4 of our 5 fish, and our big kicker was a 32-incher. That was probably one of the most surreal moments of the whole season. When that thing bit, you know, we were contemplating whether it was a muskie or a big pike on the live scope. And Joe was like, well, I'm going to throw at it anyways. You know, we'll see what happens. And sure enough, it actually bit. I thought, holy smokes. I mean, and that when it was flat calm when we caught it. So we seen it like 10 feet down, and both of our heads were just like, holy smokes. You know, it looked like it was about 34 inches, you know, down in the water like that. So,
yeah,
that was a real cool moment in the season. So we walked out a Leech with another win. So then we kind of tried to do a little bit of math before the points came out, just to kind of see, you know, formulate what our game plan was going to be for Lake of the Woods. And then went into Lake of the Woods with about 4 days of pre-fish. And, you know, the wind blew a couple days, made pre-fish for live scope a little bit challenging. Obviously, it would have been a lot easier to troll some cranks around and stuff like that. But we had about a 29-point lead going into points, so that kind of affected our decisions on a lot of what we did in pre-fish. But we ended up stumbling on a place that had kind of all calibers of fish in it. So we knew if we went there 2 days in a row, we would for sure walk out with our, you know, even a mid 25 to 30-pound bag, which would likely seal the deal for us for team of the year. So It was kind of another crazy scenario where all we were trying to look at was team of the year, and we ended up, you know, finding 10 really, really big giant ones for that one as well.
I mean, it's almost like a dream season, other than the fact that you weren't able to fish the big stone event, which, again, yep, you know, just reiterating, that didn't affect the team of the year. Everybody gets, you know, everybody takes their 3 best out of 4 anyways. So if you don't fish one completely, then that's just automatically your drop. Well, okay.
Yep.
So, you know, that being said, but, you know, I like kind of, you know, again, we're just kind of like getting to know you as an angler. Talking about the fishing that you're doing recently is just, you know, it's a way to learn from you, but also get to know you at the same time. And it's just entertaining. I'm curious about, you know, like, and I talked to Joe about this too, actually, when I had him on, because you guys had just won that Mississippi tournament, I believe. But anyways, yep, for you personally, like, talking about these tournaments as we go along and just kind of, you know, reflecting on them a little bit. But, like, you know, the Mississippi River tournament out of Red Wing there, that yep, pools 3 and 4, the first tournament of the year, you guys wanted, it was, you know, like you said, it was a pre-spawn bite. So the fish had migrated up, they were up against the dam, you know, it was a big deal there. But, you know, taking a step back, you know, you said you typically try to survive the Mississippi River. You've never really had a marquee finish on the Mississippi River. Yep. I can totally get that. I feel like any, you know, all the tournament anglers that I ever talked to, like everybody's got a thing. We've all got strengths and weaknesses. Sometimes it's not even that. Sometimes it's just, you know, for whatever reason, there's a body of water that's just got your number. You know, if you're, you know, a lot of tournament anglers, they have that, you know. I'm curious about that for you. Like, how do you talk about, you know, fishing a tournament on the Mississippi River? Like, you know, just kind of looking at it objectively for yourself as an angler, thinking about all the, not just the tournament days, but like the pre-fish, any hours that you've spent, you know, on that stretch of the Mississippi River. What do you feel like it is? What are some of those missing links, you know, in hindsight? What are some of the things that, you know, you feel like you're working on? Like, what is it about the Mississippi River that you feel makes you feel like you just got to survive it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of comes down to, we just have nothing, you know, within a couple hours that sets up like it to even practice on, just, you know, on a weekend or, you know, a weeknight after work to go out fishing for a couple hours. You know, it just sets up so much different with the current, whether it's coming up or going down, or it's stable, or, you know, the time of the year. Are they coming up the river? Are they going back down to Pepin? Are they out in Pepin? You know, and just total different techniques than we normally fish down here. So, I mean, really, it's just time. We really should spend a couple weekends a year down there just fun fishing, just learning it for when we're going to be going back there, because there's always going to be tournaments on that system. So I think it's just a time thing and just learning how to do it better.
Zuloff Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area
with over 40 years of combined experience.
They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zuloff Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zuloff Construction at their website, zuloffconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast.
JT Outdoor Products has created a phenomenal lineup of technique-specific rods built entirely to give any angler the advantage against a tournament field, or more importantly, the target species of the day. For any angler that is looking to take their next fishing experience to another level, consider the confidence you might have with a JT rod in your hands. For more information on all the rod offerings at JT, head to their website. That's jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Also on the website, take the time to look up the impressive pro staff that JT has put together and find out why so many top industry pros, from tournament anglers to fishing guides across the Midwest, swear by the rods built at JT Outdoor Products. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Unless my feet are on the bank, I feel like I'm a good bank river fisherman. But yeah, it's absolutely. Like there's something about what you know, there's like an expectation, sort of like a weight on your shoulders, that, you know, when you get in a boat and you got to fish, you know, these fish in current, there's junk fish around, like the different species. So you're trying to figure out your electronics, but man, it's like, you know, all of a sudden.
And the best river fishermen, you know, they don't even use their electronics. You know, the river rats, they know how to look at what seam is setting up right and where to cast in it. You know, I've heard people talk about, you know, it's a 2-foot little box that you got to cast your jig into to hit the seam right, you know, stuff like those little tiny nuances is what needs to be learned.
Those are such interesting things, such interesting elements to like tournament fishing, or just, you know, sort of forces you to kind of be outside your comfort zone, or at least away from home and not on your home body of water. But when you get on a river system and you're not from there, and it's like, man, you know, you're trying to figure out what your confidences are, or you're just trying to find some, you know, through your electronics or whatever it is. And then here you got, you know, somebody over here in a, you know, a 16-foot tiller that is, you know, guiding, you know, four people from, you know, who knows where that have never reeled in a fish before, and they get a limit by the end of the day, and the guy doesn't have the guy's got no, you know, no electronics or whatever, you know. But yeah, like there's so much fun nuance to that river fishing. I'm definitely intrigued by it, but it's, you know, I don't even know how many conversations a guy has to have before you just gotta go down and you know, just get in the boat with some of these guys that are just totally just ratty, you know, just those dented up 18-foot tillers that, yes. You know, like we talk about it all the time. It's like, you don't need to, you go to a bait shop near a destination like that, you don't need to get advice from the guy that's got like a super clean, shined up, like big 22-foot fiberglass boat, and he's peacocking around with his tournament jersey on. You're looking for the guy that you never see, the guy that's in your blind spot, that's like keeping his head down. He goes into a bait shop, he just buys a couple things and he's out. He parks in the back, he's got just a dented up, you know, welded aluminum tiller boat, and you know, he just, you know, there's just something just wicked fishy about those guys. Like, those would be the guys, you know, that
absolutely you just gotta jump in with them.
Man, totally. But anyways, then moving on, you know, so then your next stop was Mille Lacs. Tell me a little bit about Mille Lacs. Tell me a little bit about your history on Mille Lacs and just kind of how that fished and how that all, you know, kind of played out, and what, you know, what your favorite elements are to fishing that body of water.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny you say that. Mille Lacs honestly has our number two. I think the best we've ever done on Mille Lacs is a fifth place finish, and I think we've done that maybe twice. We've never really cracked the code on Mille Lacs. It's been super tough, especially since a lot of that mud bite isn't happening anymore, where, you know, they had 45, 50 pounds out there a couple times. The bites definitely keyed up to be a lot different, and it seems like the guys who win it all the time, they've got that 28-inch kicker or so, and we've just never really been able to crack that code. I mean, we've come close a few times for sure, but to crack a win out there seems super, super tough. But going to this tournament out there this year, we found a spot that was just kind of on the outside of a bit of boat pressure, and I believe that a lot of these big fish kind of kicked out off this deeper edge. And honestly, on this tournament, we ran the whole brake line for 8 hours straight, never picked up the trolling motor. Once the big motor shut off when we were at our spot, we never started again the whole rest of the day. So we just worked this spot back and forth for 8 hours. And I think we ended up with five, real close to 26 inches for a fifth place finish. Like I said, I think we're 5-6 pounds behind the lead. Evan Rosemore, he cracked a real good bag out there this year, and he took the win on that one. But yeah, just kind of worked the same spot like crazy, and the right one showed up.
How do you feel like Mille Lacs fished this year in comparison to other years? Because that's, you know, another one that's, it's super popular in the content world. You know, you go on social media, I mean, it's a phenomenal destination. It's just chock full of walleyes and bass, and you know, it's what a place. And so, you know, the information's not hard to come by, but it seems like, with the clear water, spooky fish, it's just, you know, it just kind of comes with its own little owner's manual. How do you find Mille Lacs to be? What are some of the important elements that you feel like sort of, you know, just, you know, kept you in the ball game and got you some of your better fish catches there this year?
Yeah, for sure. The last 4 or 5 years, I would say the weed bite has become really popular. And then maybe the last 2 years, I would say it's, in our opinion, it's kind of died down a little bit for big fish. There's still plenty of a real good fish in the weeds, but the ones you need on tournament day have kind of started to slack out of the weeds a little bit. So we kind of went around the lake trying to find some different stuff, and we had a gravel spot that ended up turning on for us that worked real well. But yeah, Mille Lacs is so tough. I mean, you can be up shallow, you can, you know, just shallow flats. You can, if there's any good wind, you can be on any windblown rocks. Like I said, the weed bite can be good. And then, of course, the mud bite, I think, is turning around maybe a little bit. I don't think there's any super, super good bags that came from the mud this year. But yeah, I mean, you can kind of pick and choose what works well for your style of fishing and kind of go with it out there, which is super fun. I mean, there's walleyes all over in Mille Lacs, which makes it super fun.
Was Big Stone the third stop that you guys skipped, or was that?
Yes.
Yeah. So then you got yourself to Leech Lake, and tell us a little bit about that Leech Lake deal. Now, you kind of already did. I obviously be memorable, that big fish catch that you guys had in your boat. I'm just kind of curious, you know, you talk about finding your own thing off to the side, because it seemed like there was, you know, kind of a community area that was setting itself up. You know, I'm curious about those details of the story, you know, but also, like, how often do you feel like that's the case, you know, and all the tournament fishing that you've done now to this point, how often do you feel like you can find just like what seems like the best on the lake and fish it on tournament day versus, you know, you kind of got to find plan B, C, and D because the pressure is going to be on plan A. I'm just sort of curious about sort of your take on that, using Leech Lake as the example.
Yeah, for sure. And that's kind of a tough question to explain, but yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's not like you can just sit there all pre-fish 500-600 yards away and just watch a spot to see how many boats come in. So, you know, it's kind of hard to get a read on that, but you know, if you go check a spot and there are boats constantly coming in and going out, or, you know, there's 10 of them sitting there. I mean, you can kind of get a feel for what kind of pressure it's having on it. But honestly, that kind of, like I was talking about earlier, that kind of suits Joe and I's fishing style a little bit about going to a spot and putting the trolling motor down and not taking it back out of the water till it's time to go back in. It's scary to do because you're definitely fishing places that aren't the best on the lake or don't have the highest numbers. But if in the same breath, if you can come across enough fish, you know, there's enough there to get the job done. So, yeah, it's kind of tough to put into words really on how to explain it. But I would definitely take a spot that's got 75% less fish, but zero anglers fishing it, rather than, you know, 75% of the lake's fish, but there's also 50 boats sitting on it.
Yeah.
It's tough to weave in and out of boats, but like I said, plus the pressure that also gets put on them, you know, every time you yank a big one out of there, they're smart. They know what's going on. They feel the sonar, they feel the boats, they're spooking from getting drove over the top of. I mean, it's, you know, it's intricate really, I feel.
Yeah. What you said right there is like exactly what I kind of wanted to get into, and I'm on the outside looking in. I don't fish these tournaments, but I'm fascinated by it. You know, I have all these conversations. I learn so much from it and I'm just entertained by it. But I think that's sort of, you know, that's sort of the fun part of that's like the fishiest part of this conversation. Because I think anybody, even if you fish tournaments or not, you can sort of conceptualize, you know, the numbers element to your description, which I think is accurate.
Yep.
It's like, you know, from a tournament perspective, I think almost any tournament angler would agree. If you assume everything is like status quo, but if you're just going off the numbers of like, I'd rather pick a spot that has 75% less fish in it, but I have it to myself, versus, yep, a spot that has 75% of the fish in the lake, but I'm sharing it with, you know, say 50% or 30% of the tournament field, and everybody's a good angler nowadays. Like, you can't even, like, nobody's a slouch. You can't, like you just, you ha- everybody's a factor when you're sharing the spot.
Absolutely. Yes.
Like, you know, but it's definitely the second part of your description there that I think is the most fun and interesting, and I think it's very accurate, is it's not just the numbers element to just like having a spot to yourself and having those fish to yourself, but it's also how those fish react and how you can fish those fish. I would love to hear, you know, again, Leech Lake being sort of the you know, my example for you, but any other stories that come to mind to kind of depict that, like how often, especially during pre-fish, it's kind of a pre-fish question. It's like, how much time are you comfortable spending where you are, you know, you're balancing where you're just trying to find what you feel to be the best area, or try to have your finger on the pulse of, like, you know, good things going on in the lake, versus how often are you, like, intentionally looking for something that's off the beaten path, like where your brain is telling you to go make decisions in a certain way, where you're seeking out those spots that have 75% less fish because you're looking for those unknown, you know, or looking for those under the radar places. And maybe just like some stories to back it up of like how you feel like that affects the fishing, and where, when you get into these areas, you know, looking at the fish behavior and how your, maybe your batting average goes up all of the sudden when you, you know, during a pre-fish, you realize, well, these fish got to be unpressured because they're just biting better. Like any stories that kind of, you know, sort of back that up a little bit that might be entertaining for us.
Yeah. You know, I think that brings me to one of our stories on cast. We had an area for our overs that was going pretty well. And, there was not very many boats that had been looking at it in practice or that showed up on game day. And it seemed to me like you could pop in and maybe throw at, you know, 10 to 15 of them before you would finally get one to bite, where other areas you could possibly fish it for a half a day and not get one to bite. You know, it's really tough to figure out, really tough to decide where those spots are setting up. But it kind of turns into a data and a number game, right? Like if you throw at five of them and the sixth one bites, you know, that's a good mental note to make, where if you go to more of a community spot and you can sit and fish them for 3-4 hours before you finally get one to go. You kind of gotta remember always the moods of the fish. You know, if you can go into a spot and have confidence that you're going to get one in a half hour, I mean, that's huge. And it depends the format of the tournament you're fishing, right? Cast, we're actually weighing them, so you get two overs and three unders. So that kind of dictates a little bit of extra game planning and stuff like that. But it all comes down to a numbers game, you know, who can come across the most fish in 8 hours. And you know, that's how I think you win. But another key detail to pay attention to, like you were just talking about, is I always think it takes something a little bit outside of the box to win a tournament, whether it's a spot that nobody else found, or whether it's a technique that nobody else is doing, or something in your boat control that nobody else has figured out. I believe to win something, you got to be doing something different than what everybody else is doing.
Yeah. You got finding your own fish. And tell me I'm wrong here. Like, that's the most fun way to win a tournament.
Absolutely. Having something all to yourself. It's like the weight on your shoulders. There's none there. It's almost like you're just fun fishing for the day. You know, there's no pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like it's not, you know, it's fun to win. Anytime you win, great. But when it, you know, the one that you remember, the one that, you know, when you're looking at the wood that's sitting above your fireplace and you're looking at a lineup of them, you're going to stare a little bit longer at the ones that were like that. The ones that, yes, you know, those good finishes, those wins, those high finishes you had when you had something dialed. To me, that's the most relatable element to tournament angling for a non-tournament angler, is like that. Yep. Still can be what I'm emulating. If I go out fishing, I'm not competing against anyone. You know, in reality, I'm not competing, you know, for a prize, anything. I'm competing against the fish and maybe just the former version of myself to, you know, get better. And that really just revolves around being better at finding good bites, finding good new bites. And
yep, you're absolutely right. It's you against the fish.
Yeah. So for as long as I've been doing this podcast, and even before, the manifestation of it all is like, I'm just a sort of a fanatical tournament fan, because I feel like when we have conversations like this and just sort of highlighting just these elements to success of a tournament season, of a tournament a day, things like that. You know, I just feel like that's what has helped me just put better ideas together, be a better decision maker, and just a better fisherman on just any average day going out. And it's like, sometimes I'm completely trying to emulate what I hear from guys like you, and sometimes I just pick out those little nuggets that help me sort of keep my time management rolling on the water. Like, I might still be just pulling bottom bouncers and crawlers with my wife in the boat or whatever, but you can always up your game. Even in that scenario, you can always up your game with time Absolutely. Management. You can always up your game with moving in shallower, moving out a little deeper, never taking the same pass twice, understanding that fish are spooky to the boat, and just like factoring all these things in. Like, man, it just, it has just accounted for so much of my success the last 4 or 5 years. And so I don't know, man. I love it. It gets me juiced up too. It's like, I get jacked up, yeah. And then I got to clear my schedule one more day this week so I can get out for a few more hours.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And you touched on something real important there, making those fishing moves throughout the day, just because you found an area that's juicy and pre-fish, you show up there and they're not there. Okay. Well, look at the day. Is there wind? Is there overcast? Is there sun? Is it bluebird, cold front, south wind? What's the day giving you? You definitely feel like on pre-fish, it's so easy to make those moves. People are always doing well in pre-fish once you get a little bit dialed in. Those moves are so easy to make when there's no pressure. But showing up to your start spot on tournament day, and guess what? Fish have fins. They move, and they're not there, right? What is the next call on where to go? Are you going shallower? Are you going deeper? Those tournament day decisions are honestly what really does it. And unfortunately you do it wrong and you got nothing, and you do it right and you're the hero, So those tournament day decisions are definitely huge. We've definitely had to make a few of those calls in our past, where it was, it's a little scary, starting out, showing up to your start spot and nobody's home. It's like, oh boy, here mm-hmm. we go.
Oh yeah, man. Tell me about Lake of the Woods. We got to get on that topic because we don't know how long it's going to take. So tell me about Lake of the Woods. It just happened here like a couple days ago. You and Joe, you fish the it's a 2-day, Ames, most of the Ames are like shootouts. They're 1-day shootouts, but the state championship is a 2-dayer. It was on Lake of the Woods this year. It's been on Lake of the Woods a few times, but it's on Lake of the Woods this year. You guys were in the driver's seat. You kind of already explained that part. Like, you guys were in the driver's seat for team of the year. So you just had a few boxes you had to check for that. But, tell me sort of the story getting to the point of winning the whole thing.
Yeah, it was crazy. We definitely keyed down some good areas in pre-fish. It definitely went different than how I would have predicted it to go on versus on where the fish came from. It was again those game day decisions. We started off in a spot on day one, and just right away out of the gates, we had 45 pounds by about 9:30 or 10 o'clock. Fishing was super good. I think we had all 27s and a 30 incher. And then it was flat calm, so we made a long run all the way across the lake, and just like we talked about, we got there and there was fish there, but we didn't see any big ones in about a 3-mile pass. So we picked back up and went to our third spot. This is about 1 o'clock in the afternoon by now, and we were really happy with that bag. We were ecstatic. We're like, this is awesome. We're probably not gonna have the lead with this, knowing the results of the tournaments that have been up there this summer so far. And we just got super lucky on our third spot, and just barely put the trolling motor down, and there was a 30 and a quarter laying in front of the boat. Joe whacked that one. Got that on the SD card and moved, I don't know, maybe another 400 yards, and there was another 29 and three quarters laying there. Joe whacked that one again. So that was the end of day one. We came in with 50 pounds. We left our spot at about, I don't know, 220. You'd give us enough time just in case we had a mechanical breakdown. That was definitely one of our big concerns, as we made sure to make our route back where a lot of other tournament anglers would be taken as well, just to make sure that if something did happen, we could hitch a ride in to make it in time. So that was day one. Day two was very scary. We had about a 2-hour fog delay, And knowing that we put our 45 pounds together while we were still sitting there looking at the dock was super scary. So we got out to our first spot, and our first 5, 6, maybe 8 fish we put on the card were all like 22 to 24 inches. So we were like, oh boy, this is not going great. But we were really excited to put that, you know, 25, 30 pounds on the card, just because we knew that was a good position for team of the year. So yeah, a little bit of weight was lifted off the shoulders at that point. And then, honestly, we just started hauling the mail on the trolling motor, covering as much ground as we possibly could. And over the next hour and a half, we put a 31, a 30 and three quarters, a couple 29s and a 28 and a half on the card in a relatively short order. And I would definitely account that to the notion of major speed, going as fast as we possibly could, and not stop until we knew we had the right fish in front of the boat. That can come with a couple mistakes. I feel like we might have drove over a couple that would have helped us, but we were just waiting to see that perfect big beautiful mark, and we weren't going to stop the boat until we seen it. So I would definitely account our day two success to water coverage for sure.
When you're pre-fishing on Lake of the Woods, well, first off, do you and Joe pre-fish in the same boat, or are you guys separate?
No, always separate boats. Yep.
Oh, right. Okay. And especially with forward sonar nowadays, it's like kind of a one-man deal anyways, it seems like, especially like, like pre-fishing in Minnesota, like historically, you know, if you could pre-fish with your whole family and your kids just so you could have trolling rods, you'd do it.
Yep.
But yeah, it's a different deal nowadays. And so that obviously, is a big, great factor between the two of you as your team. You're covering all that water. But like in pre-fish on Lake of the Woods this year, like what's the biggest thing that you got to figure out? Eliminating dead water, is it are the spots big and easy to find, but maybe the technique or just like how to read and size up fish, like see as many fish as you can, just to get a muscle memory of like which ones are the big ones, like what's sort of like the hierarchy or sort of the list of priorities that you're actually trying to figure out and factor in during pre-fish?
Yeah. So the last few championships that we've had up there, we've always kind of had maybe a 5 square mile area where the big ones are holding. And they've always been big schools of fish. You know, there's 22 to 24s, 26s, 28s, 32s, there's all calibers of big fish in there. And we spend a lot of time running around, with our 2D up on step, just trying to find those areas that have the masses of fish. And honestly, we never really found that happening. So we tried that for a long time, and kind of our opinion on how it set up was a lot of those big fish had kind of just scattered. You know, if you take a big giant school of fish and you just put one out in every single direction, I mean, they become really, really hard to find, real needle in a haystack. And so we spent a lot of time trying to find that and kind of just never really did. So we kind of just started to key in on areas. Well, if you could go, for 4 hours just straight in this direction in this area, could you come across enough big ones to get 5? So that was just kind of where we keyed that down. Like I stated earlier, the coverage, power fishing, going as fast as you possibly could to get in front of as many marks as you could. And there's two ways to go about that. The first way is to cast maybe once or twice at every mark. If it doesn't bite, move on. And the other way is to, once you see that big mark that you know is the right mark, to camp on that fish and cast at it until it bites. It kind of depends on how the bite sets up, where, how many big fish are really in that area for which tactic or mindset is best. There's definitely ways where one or two casts at a big one and moving on to the next one works well. But like I said, if you don't have enough big fish in the area and you don't spend enough time on them, you spend too much time not fishing. So it's kind of a mindset, on which direction to take on that, are we just going to fish each mark as fast as we can for less than 2 minutes and on to the next one? Or if we know this fish is the right mark, are we going to sit on it until it bites? That was another thing we looked into. And then the next thing kind of a little bit was the colors. Obviously crankbaits up there are, you know, it almost can seem like hourly, whether the sun changes or a cloud pops out or, you know, wind, stuff like that. It always seemed like in the past, everything was super color dependent. So we tried to make sure to go through as many colors as we possibly could, trying to figure out that right one. And I think it just like always, it kind of changed throughout the day, changed between day one and day two. It's always a little different depending on conditions.
That's such good stuff, man. I mean, just great things to consider for anybody, you know. I'm so happy that we've finally able to kind of have you on for the first time. You know, the first one's always the hardest, and I definitely want to, I want to be on your schedule for down the road someday to do a deep dive on Pokegama. I think that's that lake's got a very interesting story to it. I love the... that one attracts, that Graja tournament attracts some great tournament anglers. That's a fun looking tournament.
It's scary for sure. I mean, the locals that are in it are crazy good, but the out of town talent that also comes into it is unbelievable as well.
Yeah. And everybody loves it. Like everybody that's ever fished there for that tournament, but just fish there in general. Like everybody just talks about that lake. Like it is, it's just a honeymoon. Like it's just such a cool place.
And the fish
place.
Are huge. I mean, the all the fish are super fat and the fight they put on is unbelievable. I mean, you can fight a 30 incher for 6-7 minutes pretty easily out there. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's amazing that, it's funny how that topic only comes up every once in a while. I hear it on Fort Peck a lot. And I've heard it from Pokegama, guys that catch a lot of walleyes, guys that make a career out of it, guys, you know, just like high level dudes that have put their hands on more walleyes in the last 5 years than I will in my lifetime. They speak to those walleyes on Pokegama that just fight. Like you hook a 22 incher and you're positive you broke your PB.
They're 5 pounds, you know, a 22 incher. It's like, holy smokes.
And they fight hard, man. I've heard that about that lake. It very much intrigues me. So but anyways, Dylan, man, I appreciate it, dude. Awesome recap of the season. And you got a really, really a cool, fun career going on that's fun to kind of follow along. And you and Joe got a cool thing going on there. And what a fun little story there. I know when I talked to him last time, we didn't really talk about like how you guys got together, your origin story very much. And obviously something's working because cool stuff is happening. But that being said, man, unless something else is on your mind, man, go ahead. But I would say we can close this out by just let people know, maybe if you want to, like, you know, your socials or any content that you want to promote. If people have questions or maybe they just want to follow along with, you know, your tournament exploits or anything like that, just go ahead with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can follow me on Facebook, Dylan Mackey, on Instagram at Dylan Mackey Fishing. That's really about it for what I've got for socials at the moment. And likewise, I appreciate the opportunity to come on this podcast. It was fun. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. No, I really do appreciate it. And I,